Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
Something that's always been coming up in my practice and I struggle with, where I call it when you're at E. So, you know, like with your car, when your car's saying the E, but
don't push it.
Yeah. So we push it, and unfortunately that does damage to the car. So I always say to people when we start working, you should never get to E.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show today, here in season 15, and that's a lot of seasons. So it's very cool. And I'm, for those of you who have been along for a lot of the journey, today's a topic I have been wanting to address for quite some time. And I was so happy to see this book come across my desk and to get to meet its author. We spent some time talking before the show, and I am so pleased to introduce you today to Chinasom Nwabweze, who is the founder and managing director at Dreamcatchers Performance LLC, high performance coaching consulting company. And drawing from 2 decades of experience as a leadership coach and performance psychologist, he recently authored the book that we're going to be talking about today, Real Talk, A New Approach to Men's Mental Fitness. It's an Amazon bestseller, and he's got a corresponding podcast he hosts called Real Talk, Conversations on Mental Fitness. And Chinasom, you've spent more than 2,000 hours coaching global brand leaders, C-suite executives, helped them achieve career-altering results while discovering the guiding force central to that mental fitness revolution. And I love this quote. That is so important. There is no sustainable high performance without well-being. Chinasom, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Thank you so much, David. Really a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation, to talk about the book. And yeah, just anytime I get to talk about the book is just a pleasure for me. And just to share with other people in the workspace to see what I'm looking forward to, the questions you're going to ask me. And I always learn a lot from being asked the questions. So excited and looking forward to having some fun.
Well, me too. And like I said, the topic is one that I've been definitely wanting to talk about on the show. Mental health is just so important in so many ways. Before we dive into the book, though, and your work in this area, I want to ask you if you could take us back as far down your memory lane as you want to. But what is your earliest memory of yourself as a leader, where you remember yourself leading in some way, shape, or form?
Wow. As a leader, I could go all the way back to childhood because I'm the oldest son from my mom. So I was always having that put upon me that you need to lead by example and show up for my two sisters. But for me, actually, this actually jumped out to me because we're going through a lot of uncertainty. And it was actually when my first role as a manager and I was leading the team. And it was during the last financial crisis. I'm obviously giving my age away now. Some people wouldn't remember when Lehman Brothers and everybody crashed. But I do remember that period because it's really stuck with me, of the power of when you get people together and you unite them, how much magic can happen. So I was leading a team. We were working in financial services for securitization. And I remember we had to say there was about 65, 70 people in the office. We all got whittled down to 14 that day. I just remember that day because the phone would ring. If your phone rang, you picked it up. You went to a room, you didn't come back. Everybody was sitting there just panicking, not wanting their phone to ring. So much so that I remember actually not going to the restroom because like, you didn't want to go and think, did my phone ring, did it not ring? But at the end, when we were left, it was just, I then had a team of 7 people. And it was amazing. We had to now do the work of nearly 70 people. And having to lead through that time, there was no rule book of, okay, how do you lead this group of people? And I remember just thinking, I wasn't going to sugarcoat the fear I was feeling because I just bought a house. So I just bought a house at the time. I didn't want to do it because I was scared about getting a mortgage. So I buy the house and then financial crisis hit. So I remember going in the room and just thinking, I'm going to have to tell these people how scared I am as well. And I shared that with them. But I remember having this feeling of rolling my sleeves up and that there's going to be a lot of work because everybody else is gone. We have to keep the lights on. And just sharing the fear, I was like, there's a lot that's not in the control. I don't have the answers. Nobody's told me what's happening. But what I do know is we know the work that needs to get done. And if we focus on doing that, then chances are, fingers crossed, we're not going to be let go. But what actually happened for that year, it was probably the best team I ever worked with. And what I loved was the way everybody had each other's back. We did the best work because it was funny after the financial crisis and we rehired everybody. It still makes me laugh that when there was only 14 of us in 2 teams, we did better work than when you actually had 60 people. So I feel like I always remember that period of leading is rolling up your sleeves, be as authentic and honest with people as possible because they always respond to that. And when people see that you're willing to do the work and you're not, my view at that point was I would never ask somebody to do something I'm not willing to do. So I feel like people do really resonate with that. And I think a bigger part is actually practice what you preach. So when people see the way you act, they're likely going to, if you role model what you want them to do, they're likely going to follow suit. So that period still sticks in my mind because I used to remember how everyone would have each other's back. If something was not going right, people would just, they would step in without even you asking them. And it showed me the power of the human spirit when everybody pulls together in one direction, how much they can achieve.
Oh, powerful moment. A couple of things I'm thinking about as you reflected on that experience. So first is a couple of things we have in common. Also the oldest, also some of my earliest leadership experiences, definitely being that first board and having all of those. Also bought my first house just going into that financial crisis.
You have that feeling of fear. It was like,
what's going on here? But then, as you're talking about your experience leading through that, your experience of fear and not keeping that in, but acknowledging that fear, being real about it, being real about what you didn't know, about what you do know, the clarity of, hey, there's a lot of things I don't know, but what I do know is this is the work in front of us. And you were real about that. And the team was able to rally around that.
Yeah, I was glad I did that because I just remember we had a lot of leaders coming in and they'll tell us that, everything is good. And you could always sense that they were just not telling you the truth. And the one thing I thought at this moment was I need this team to trust me. And for them to trust me, I was like, I've got to like tell them the truth, however hard it is. I can't sugarcoat it. So I was glad I was courageous enough to not come up with some political speech at the time and actually just told them the truth. Scary, actually. I remember telling them and thinking, how is this going to land? But I just had to trust my instincts at that time.
Your instincts served you well in that environment, and which it gets us into some of the content and the thinking and wisdom that you have to share. Chinasom Nwabeze, your book is Real Talk, A New Approach to Men's Mental Fitness. And throughout the book, you use the term mental fitness. There's a lot of different terms, we could use, well-being, mental health, different things. You use mental fitness, and I know reading through the book, that's an intentional choice on your part. What is mental fitness from your perspective?
For me, mental fitness is, we all have, like when we have our mental health, it's about similar to physical fitness. Okay, you have your mental health. Now start to understand what is it that, that keeps your emotion, I kind of call it like you have an emotional energy tank. What is it that you need to do to make sure that tank is filled up? and whatever those practices are, carving out and being intentional that, okay, today I've done something to fill up my tank. And then also practicing the mental skills where, for instance, when that incident happened, you can quite easily go down a rabbit hole worrying about uncertainty and what does this mean, but actually using those mental skills to say, okay, what's in my control? Am I actually putting my energy where it needs to go? So mental fitness is just really being proactive to sustain your well-being. Because for me, I feel like the link between well-being and performance, I've always kind of thought was there. So if you want to perform, you need to take care of your mental fitness to make sure that life is going to come and take that energy, take that emotional energy from you. So being proactive and intentional. Because sadly, there was a situation in my family where when I saw when people lose their mental health, it's so hard to try and fix it or put it back together. So I was like, okay, now that I have my mental health, I'm going to focus as much as possible, similar to physical fitness, to practice to keep my mental health. So that's why I use the word mental fitness, because I feel it's an ongoing practice, and it's also a journey that we're on to. Life keeps throwing challenges on us, and we have to keep adapting and changing and find out what works for us to keep our mental health.
Does this metaphor, I don't want to stretch it too far, so you tell me if I'm off base here or not, but is it similar to, you know, as we're doing physical fitness and we're lifting or running or biking or swimming or whatever we're doing, and our practice is going pretty well, and then one day you wake up and you got a ligament that's just not right, and okay, now I've got to, you know, treat that differently. I may need to use some heat, use some cold, maybe stay off of that leg for at that level for a couple of weeks. Or are there parallels in terms of the way that you're looking at mental fitness?
Yeah, I love your analogy, because I feel like when you're exercising, one day you'll be exercising, you probably do a bit too much, and then you wake up and you're hobbling with one leg, and then you think, okay, I can't run anymore, I can't do this, but I still need to exercise. So you find out, okay, I go to the swimming pool, or you go into yoga. So you keep adapting. So for me, that really resonates with mental fitness. Because for instance, when I became a dad, that was an eye-opening experience to me, because the things that filled up my energy tank, when you're not sleeping so well, they weren't filling up my energy tank. And it took me like a while to work out, okay, these strenuous sporting activities, I used to play squash at the time, you can't keep doing that when you're not sleeping. So I had to adapt and find going for long walks with my son. He got to sleep. I got an hour and a half walk. That was what was going to work at that period in time. So you have to keep, like, as you said, adjusting and adapting. If you wake up and the ligament's not working, what can you do differently? And so having that curiosity to your mental fitness is quite important. So I'm now a dad of two. When my daughter came along, I was actually sit down and think, okay, what needs to change for this period to keep my mental fitness?
Such a good practice. I want to dive into some of the specifics of it. Before I go there and to some of the specific practices of what mental fitness looks like and how you maintain that practice, you address the title of the book, A New Approach to Men's Mental Fitness, Real Talk, A New Approach. Why men specifically? Why did you choose to write? Obviously, mental health and mental well-being, things affect all of us. Why the focus on men?
That was when I sat down and thought, okay, I'd been coaching through the pandemic. And for me, it was like an eye-opening experience getting to work with people and coaching them. And I just realized the importance of well-being and mental fitness. So I said, okay, I wanted to take all that I'd seen in my coaching practice and somehow share it with everybody. And when I looked at this field in well-being, I kind of realized that men was kind of, we're a forgotten group. There wasn't a lot out there focusing on men. And for me as well, at the time, I'd just gone through, I changed career. I'd moved from the UK to the US. I'd gone through a lot of challenges where I kind of realized, even though it was my job to be focusing on well-being, I still was getting my ass handed to me. So I also realized that there was a gap there, that for men, because of what society tells us, the way we're supposed to show up, we end up finding that we can't understand our emotions, and we can never kind of take the armor that we're carrying around down to kind of let our guard down. And also we struggle to be vulnerable, because I feel to ask for help, you've got to be vulnerable in the first place. So I started to realize that there was a gap there. Plus a lot of my friends, at the time, I'm mid-40s now. So I was finding a lot of friends were now starting to have mental breakdowns at that age. And I started to ask myself the question, what is it? Why is this cycle repeating itself? So that's when I realized I was going to focus on men in particular, just because I felt that group was not being served. And that was, yeah, that was what led to
some in this era. In this particular culture and time and period of time that exists. And, you know, as I was going through the book and preparing for our show today, I was thinking about a friend of mine who, friend for decades at this point, we've known each other a very long time, and sent another friend of mine, the two of us, he sent an email a couple weeks ago, and he said, we had just had a conversation in live online kind of thing. And a couple days later, he sent us both an email and he said, hey guys, wasn't completely honest with you when we were talking. He said, I'm really struggling. And he said, and he was describing, like you're saying, some, you know, where your mental just breaks down, and he was upset, depressed, really having some feeling out of control of his own emotions. The fitness was definitely not there.
Yeah.
And he said, but the part that got me, and I think is so relevant to what you're just saying, is he said, I've felt this way for a while. This is the first time I have ever disclosed it and acknowledged I need help. And that is a big deal to put that in writing and send you this message. Like, you know, we've known each other a long time. And the vulnerability that you're talking about, and he's not somebody who's like, you know, your traditional classic, like, I'm macho, I don't have feelings, I'm not gonna, you know, like, that's not who he is. But to admit that level of pain and hurt and need for help, very, very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like, and I see in your book, like the need to say something when you're hurting is part of it. But I was definitely thinking about him in terms of some of those cultural elements. And I've certainly had my own struggles there too, of admitting when things aren't good and that's okay to admit so that you can figure out how to get them better.
Yeah. And I love that you shared that point, because I think there's a bit in the book when all the friends are talking and they're trying to help this one friend who something has happened to. But then in them talking, they actually realized they were all struggling and they never reached in to check in with each other. And I found that for guys, it's very hard for us to ask for help. I don't know exactly how, why, but I even found myself when I went through this transition, it was hard to be in that vulnerable place that, you know, things weren't quite working, things were tough, things were more challenging than I expected. So being able to actually open up and say, I'm struggling, I even struggled with it. And I was like, okay, I wanted to remove the stigma around that, because what I found from my coaching practice, just like what your friend did, just the fact of just saying it out loud and saying it to your friends, you always think, oh, I don't want to burden them, or I don't want to, but it's always better to say it out loud, 100% better. And it's never as bad as you think when it's just in your own head. So I really wanted to write something to just say to guys, just say it out loud, just start the conversation, because your friends would 100% rather you said something. It doesn't matter whether they can fix it or not, but rather that you told them than sadly they find out that you've had a mental breakdown, or God forbid, you committed suicide.
Yeah, and all this time you were hurting and never trusted that hurt or that pain to people who care about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have, with this same friend, I'm thinking about times where I went through a major life challenge. And when I was debriefing it all with him, he said, gosh, I feel like a bad friend. I didn't know. And I said, that's not your fault. I didn't tell you. You know, like exactly like you're saying is I had not shared it with him. So he couldn't support me in it because I hadn't shared it.
Yeah. And I've been making that my mission now with friends to start having this real talk. Because there's nothing more painful than, like with some friends, you find out through their wife, and my wife will find out that they were struggling with this. And I'm like, why the hell didn't you tell me? Yeah. So now I try to make sure when I have conversations, it's like, I try to ask the question of how you doing. And when they just say, yeah, I'm okay, I'm like, oh, okay, tell me why you're okay. Tell me a bit more. Just dig in a little bit deeper so that they actually share.
Our guest today is Chinasom Nwazebe Real Talk, A New Approach to Men's Mental Fitness is the book. And we're talking about mental health, about some of the challenges that keep us from sharing and speaking up with some of those challenges, and the health and wellness that's available and the support from one another that's there when we do. Chinasom, and we just did some research for our next book, which comes out in a few months here. Talked to 5,000 people around the world, or surveyed them in 46 different countries, asking about workplace conflict. And one of the things we found is that 70% of people say it's the same or worse over the last couple of years. There's more of it. And one of the main reasons people cited was more conflict due to mental health, anxiety, depression, especially coming out of the pandemic, and some of the lingering effects and things there. And I'm curious, in your coaching work and in your work with organizations, what you're seeing in terms of, you know, it's easy to say, oh, the pandemic's behind us. I mean, COVID obviously isn't behind us, but that period of lockdown and all of that is behind us. But it had a pretty major effect on organizations, on individual human beings, on families, on friends, on all those aspects of life. And I'm curious what you're seeing in terms of lingering impact that, as leaders, as people listening, and as somebody who's a practitioner in this field, what you're seeing.
I think that's a great question. And I feel like we haven't actually seen the full effects from the pandemic, because if you take a step back and just think, I moved over in 2019. So before 2020, how many people worked from home or were remote? You know, it was just not heard of, especially when I worked in banking. It was told you couldn't work from home. So we all had this partitioning in our lives where we go to work, that's our work persona. We go home, that's our home persona. That got flipped upside down. So we're now seeing into people's home. We're working a lot of people, more people working from home. And people who had kids, luckily I didn't have kids at that age, but where you had to do the homeschooling, I'm still hearing from parents that it was really, really tough. And they're still trying to see the after effects of how did it actually affect those kids, especially kids who were about to go to college.
Yeah,
those were the most affected in that area. So I feel the after effects haven't fully been seen now. But now, if we come to like this year, it's just a rapid change. So from the job I was doing, there was this thing that was called the Great Resignation. I think it was last year, where people were just resigning from their jobs. So employers were struggling to fill vacancies. They couldn't fill vacancies. Fast forward to January of this year, it just flipped like that. And then all of a sudden, people are getting laid off. So I feel like we've just been in this like washing machine cycle of change after change after change, rapid change.
Yeah.
Haven't even stopped to like, what the hell's going on? And with AI, the way AI is moving, it's going to be the same next year. So not only have we not digested what happened in the pandemic, where remote working is now a thing. Some people, and I've been working remote all through, so I don't even know what it's like to go into the office anymore. So the work structure has changed. The way you now interact with the family has changed. The way you're also supposed to integrate your work and your life, it now requires more harmony. Plus the rapid change that's happening, I think people are just in a spin. So what I see in my coaching practice is people are just struggling to like, it's not even just uncertainty, it's just the rapidness of the change. It's like you can't catch your breath.
Yeah.
I put it to like white water rafting. Like you're just going down the rapids, you turn over, you flip over, and then you're back still having to navigate the boat. And I think employers just have to realize there's a lot more support, there's a lot more skills that are needed and tools that people need just to maintain their mental fitness at this moment.
And going back to, there's no sustainable high performance without well-being, and recognizing all of these impacts. You know, that washing machine or that whitewater rapids metaphor, it really feels true in that, as you were thinking about AI, it hasn't been like publicly available and out the way that people are using it now. At the time that this airs, I think it will be about a year, like just over a year. Like it hasn't been hardly any length of time, really. A blip in human history, and yet it just feels like, oh, that's the way it is, and we're all adjusting, you know. That's just one thing. That's one thing out of all of the elements that you just listed. So, so a couple things. One, as leaders, we have to recognize that not just our teams, but us as human beings too, that we're all still digesting. I like your word there, digesting, figuring out, incorporating, integrating all of this stuff that's happening in the life that we're living, and that that has an impact, and we need to have awareness of it and maybe talk about it, maybe process how we're doing with it, those sorts of things. So I am curious, let's get into some of the practical mental fitness skills. We want to build this fitness. I want to be able to integrate some of these things. I want to be able to have a practice of mental fitness and mentally, you know, I always think of physical fitness. I want to be able to lift my grandchild up when I'm 80 years old and play catch and all those kinds of things. What do I need to be doing mentally? What are some practices here we can get into?
So the stuff I put in the book, there's also something which I now share, is this visual aid. So I think this is your emotional and energy tank. And I try to get people every day, when you wake up in the morning, before you start thinking about your to-do list, what you have to do is tuning into this tank and thinking, where's your emotional energy level?
And I want to, for our listeners who are in the car or you're on your treadmill, Chinasom, you're holding up a glass jar that's filled with multicolored foam balls.
Yeah. And so the foam balls are supposed to represent the things that give you joy. I call those moments. So whatever that is that's on your list that gives you joy, going for a walk with the dog, spending time with the family, going fishing, whatever it is, those are those things that fill this up. The other thing is also movement. You know, a lot of exercise is really such a great way of getting endorphins and dopamine and serotonin. So movement in the day is critical as well to put that in there. Then there's also mindfulness. Now, mindfulness is not necessarily you have to go and sit down with your leg crossed and meditate, but having that me time where you can process your emotions of what's happening and decide what's in your control, you know, what are you going to let go and what are you actually going to do? And then a key part here is rest. And for me, when I say rest, there's also rest, which is just sleep, switching off, which a lot of people are now struggling with, being able to switch off, but then also mentally recovering. So say, for instance, you just went through a big restructure at work and you've had to like change the way you do things and put on a whole new system. And for the last 3 months, you've been running really, really hard. Well, what do you do to recover mentally from doing that? Because usually what happens at work is you finish that and you jump straight into the next thing. And a big part as well is rejuvenation, which is celebrating your success. Like actually stopping and think, wow, look at all that I achieved. Like have a way of celebrating that. And also reminding yourself, why are you doing what you do? Tapping back into the purpose so that that fills up your energy tank so that you have more to go out and give and put into the world. Then a big part as well is this that I'm showing you. What's constantly happening is being taken from, you know, work will take from it, family will take from it. So it's constantly being taken from, and you need to prioritize and put boundaries in place to make sure that your energy is going where it needs to go. And in some situations, that means saying no to certain things so that you can go and top up the energy tank. But a big part now in my work is it makes people understand. So there's no sustainable high performance without well-being. And what also for me is you can't pour from an empty, I call this the cup. You can't pour, if this is empty, you can't pour anything out of it. So I really want people to start, when it comes to mental fitness, is making sure you know that you're not on empty. And if you are on empty, having a way to take steps to go and make sure that you fill this up, because it's not selfish. If you don't fill that up and you keep trying to pour from it, sooner or later, you're going to, like what I say, hit a wall, burn out, and then you're going to lose your mental fitness.
Yeah. As you're talking, agree 100% with everything you just said. And in terms of those practices. And I'm also thinking about when I am in my periods of low mental fitness, if we will. I'm thinking just last week, I had a time where I was really struggling. My sleep had been disrupted. I had a lot of business travel that had happened the week before. A combination of things, you know how things happen. So I've got a lot of business travel with great engagements, but mentally draining. Then sleep not going well, travel is its own exhaustion. major tech upheavals in the business that needed attention. So there were crises that needed to be solved, these sorts of things. And for a variety of reasons, I found myself in a really low mental fitness state where I was not feeling empowered. I was not feeling strong. I was not feeling in control of my world or my reality. And that victim thinking starts creeping in, and now I'm tossed about on the white water raft that you're talking about, and the washing machine and everything else. And I bring all that up because I know, and it's only a week and a half out from the last time I experienced that, that in those moments, that list of things that you just said that fill the tank feel so, I can give intellectual assent. I can say, yeah, Chinasom, you're absolutely right. I know those things would be helpful. I don't know how in the hell I'm going to do any of that. Like, I feel so lost and tossed about, and I'm struggling. I got no energy to do anything, much less. You want me to exercise and go for a walk and talk to my friends and journal in the morning and, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but like, I know in like my darkest, most challenging, by the way, I do all those things and I know the value of them. So just listeners, don't worry about me. You don't need to call and be like, are you all right? But in my low moments, that's how it feels like, life is our, I remember Darwin, and he wrote, life is miserable and I hate everybody. He had a low moment at that point when he wrote that. Yeah. So in your coaching work, and as you're talking with folks who are working through these things and struggling, how do you advise or recommend a listener who might be experiencing that right now and go, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. I need to eat well. I need to spend time with friends. I need to sleep. Okay, fine. But how do I get there? How do I start down that road?
That's a great question. Cause it's something that's always been coming up in my practice, and I struggle with where I call it when you're at E, there's a critical level in the tank where you should never. So, like with your car, when your car's saying the E, but
don't push it.
Yeah. So we push it, and unfortunately that does damage to the car. So I always say to people when we start working, you should never get to E, because when you get to E, I call it like there's gremlins in your mind, which they take over. When you're so tired, you can't, all those things I said to you, yeah, they're nice. You know them, but you can't do them. And all you keep seeing is the negativity. So at that point, I always try to say, don't get to E, but say we are at E, I really just try to get people to really understand that if you do believe that well-being is linked to performance, then really your calendar, you need to start finding time in your calendar to take care of yourself, to at least raise the energy up that we can start trying to fill the tank back up. Whether it's sleep, whatever you need to do to reset, you need to carve out that time. But what I realize in reality is whenever people are like that, their to-do list is still through the roof. They have so many demands on them. And what I try to do is get a mindset shift that if you don't take care of yourself now, there's going to, like all those commitments, they're just going to fall by the wayside. And once I can get people to have that mindset shift, it's amazing how they start finding time in their calendar. They can say no to things because sadly, I have to paint a picture where I've worked with people where they were on medication. So they start taking the medication. And I think that's usually the wake up call where they're like, I need external support now just to get through my day. And when I start to paint the picture of if you lose, the longer this keeps going, then it's out of your hands. So fortunately, it's trying to scare people to like, if you have to do something now, because when you get to that stage, it's true what you said, it's hard to fill the tank up because you just, you can't see the sun from the trees, or I don't know what I'm trying. You can't see, you just can't see the good part, the horizon. And All you see is like the dark clouds.
Yeah. So I think that point you make about not letting the gas tank get too low, I mean, it's going to happen, but there is a practice there. That's part of the discipline is we really, and why I like your metaphor of mental fitness is, part of the work, part of the awareness is really creating the self-awareness so we know where our tank is. Like you said, that's what we're thinking about first thing. And what do I need to do today to maintain that level? Because everything else flows from it.
100%. 100%. And I try to work with people to start to see the triggers. Like I'm sure before you got to last week, if I was asking you questions, you'd start to see the triggers that you weren't sleeping so good or you weren't exercising as much. So when you start to see the triggers, if you could actually visually see where your tank was, there would have been some requests that would have come in and you'd said, no, I can't do that. And I know it's really important, but I can't do that. I have to go and fill up the tank. And I think people don't visually, especially when people are leaders and everyone depends on them, they just think in their head, everyone depends on me. I've got to go and do it. But if you could visually see that your tank is empty, so if you go and do that, you're going to burn out and then nobody can depend on you. Yeah. Then it's a whole different mindset. I think because we can't visually see it, we just like, oh, just one more thing I'll do. Just let me just do this. And then it's too late by that point.
I remember a gentleman who taught me about fuel pumps and in modern vehicles, he said, yeah, you can drive for a while on when your tank is showing E, but you do that too long, you're going to screw up your fuel pump and it becomes harder to then put the gas in the tank. So there's the metaphor continues.
Yeah, somebody shared that with me where like you're damaging the car and I never got it, but he said that you keep doing that and you get to a situation where you're going to have to pay a lot more money to fix your car. So it's stuck in my head. And that once I see the E, I'm like, okay, we need to go and put some petrol back in the car.
Exactly. Absolutely. So, and put the petrol or the gas, depending on what part of the world you're in. All right. Love it. Chetislav, this has been such a good conversation. I really appreciate you sharing this wisdom and taking the time to write the book and to be here with us. And I know you've got a number of resources in the book. You talk about the name is escaping me. It's like a fitness index or a fitness assessment that people can take. Yeah. I know you've got some resources. Where can we go to connect with you and take some next steps here?
If you want to connect with me, please visit my website. So www.dreamcatchers, all one word, with a S on the end of catchers, performance.com. So if you go to there, there's a tab on there where you can take the quiz. Please, I'd love you to take the quiz because it gives you a starting point to start to think about the things that you put in to fill your tank, how you practice real talk. So those people that you have around you that you can go to speak to. And if you want to get, do some more work on your mental fitness, you can book a no obligation free call with me. And I'd love to speak to you to start working on your mental fitness. But also what I'd love is if you go on LinkedIn, I have a lot of, you just find my LinkedIn. I have a lot of the work I'm doing on there. So I just recently did a workshop where I actually talked about this because I knew as the Christmas period was coming, people were going to start feeling a bit burnt out. So you can watch some of the workshops I do and stay tuned. We're going to be doing another one in February, but really please just get in touch. So if you take the quiz, you get a link where you can book a call with me and I'd love to speak to people who want to start working on their mental fitness.
Fantastic. All right. And we'll get the link in there to Dreamcatcher's performance and so on and LinkedIn in the show notes. So if you are in the car or on the treadmill or out on the trail, you can get that when you get back. All right, Gina, so we have time for one more practical tip, suggestion, skill. What is there that we haven't talked about yet when it comes to investing in your mental fitness? Or perhaps maybe this is another way to go. As a leader, helping your team to invest in theirs, other suggestions that you have for us before we wrap up today?
I like the question you said as a leader, because for me, I started to dream about when I thought of mental fitness, I dreamt about the way physical fitness became like there was this revolution where there was a park near my house where I used to go for a run. And back then, 2010, 2015, I think it was, no one used to go out and exercise. This is back in the UK. Fast forward, 5 years from that point, and everyone is exercising. And I was thinking, what happened where we all started to realize exercise is good for us? So what I would love is for leaders to start practicing mental fitness, like taking mental fitness breaks. So as for instance, I work with this person who coaching is part of their well-being package. And the person missed a few calls because there's a lot going on at work. They're doing huge restructurings. And then she was in the middle of a meeting and she actually said to the person, I've got to end the meeting. I've got my coaching call now. And the person was a senior person. They were looking at them like they were crazy. And I remember thinking, wow, I can't believe you did that. Like, are you sure you're going to have a job to come back to? But what I would love leaders to start practicing and modeling is going for coaching calls or going for a walk or yoga break or something during the day to show people that this is how you take care of your mental fitness. So you want everybody around you to start taking care of their mental fitness. So you're showing them that you understand that well-being is linked to performance and you want them to sustain it. So whatever they need to do in the day to take care of their mental fitness, they have permission to do that because you're modeling it and you're doing it. And I think leaders will, they will definitely start a revolution where I can imagine in work where people, you just see people left, right, and center taking breaks to work on their mental fitness. That would be, yeah, that would be a great sight to see.
I love it. Well, I think that is a fantastic recommendation to conclude our conversation today. We've been talking with Chinasom Nwabweze. The book is Real Talk, A New Approach to Men's Mental Fitness. And Chinasom, thank you so much for being a guest with us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, David. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed this conversation. And as always, the questions you ask, I always learn new insights when I come on this. So it's a great use of my time. And this has actually helped fill my energy tank. So thank you very much.
Mine as well. And I always, I definitely get a little boost. My get that needle above the E every conversation I have here. All right, listeners, there is no sustainable high performance without well-being. So invest in yours, model it, and invite your team to be investing in theirs as well. And you're on your way to being the leader you'd want your boss to be. Until next time.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model. Offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.